Thanks for tuning in. This week we are brushing up on some childhood nostalgia as we watch Short Circuit 2, which is the more fun, family-friendly, less military-industrial complexy version of Short Circuit. Not less racist, though. No, not even a little bit less racist, but still fun and enjoyable, and we break Candace, so, you know, that's fun, too. Thanks for commenting and subscribing. Please, 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 if you're like this and want more, sign up for our Patreon feed. We will even have a full riff at the $1 level this month. And what else? Oh, there's so much else. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Letterboxd. Anywhere you can contact us, we'll be excited to hear from you. And thanks.
Welcome to Myopia Movies. We're rounding out Thanksgiving with two family films, two real homey pictures, okay? The first of which, and both will be joined by one lovely guest host, the first of which, of course, is Short Circuit 2, directed by someone I didn't bother looking at.
Hey, hey, he directed Steel.
No shit.
Yeah.
Oh.
No.
The Shaquille O'Neal movie.
Yes.
Oh. Mm. I thought you meant like Real Steel, the one with the really hot guy.
Hugh Jackman.
He's a real name.
Hugh Jackman.
Hugh Jackman.
But yeah, so we're here for the sequel to a movie who the first one's really weird. And we're talking about the better sequel, the second movie. Yeah, and I'll panel today we have.
Hello, this is Daniel, contributor to Popdos, and don't you dare fucking tear my $100 satin shirt.
Okay.
Jerry?
I'm Candace from Cineprov. Hi, guys.
I'm Nick, also from Cineprov. And if you want more Cineprov material, join the Facebook group because we've been doing live shows once a month and paid shows in between the live shows where you can see us do so far Batman Forever, Outbreak, and this month we're doing You Only Live Twice, which is not at all weird when Bond's first line is Chinese girls taste different.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. So, Candace, this is your pick.
Yes.
And occasionally we have a guest not only kind of pick, but this is, you know, back in the old style where we defend something from your youth. So can you tell us a little bit about how you feel about the movie and try to summarize it for us?
Oh my gosh. I was ill-prepared for this. I didn't know you were going to ask me to do this. Daniel's the one who takes really great notes. But, okay, I'll say this. So, the topic came up. We were talking about films that are much better than the original. So, sequels that are better. And Short Circuit 2 was my number one. And that's because as a kid, I probably have seen this movie 1,000 times. My parents, like all the parents of the 80s and 90s, bootlegged this and recorded it off television.
Sure.
And I watched it over and over and over again until the VCR tape got all messed up. And I actually did not see the first movie until like 10 years later after the original.
Sure.
And so here's the synopsis. There's a guy who builds robots for the government, and those robots are mean, and they're bad. But then one gets hit by lightning and becomes sentient, and he wants to be good. And in the sequel, you find that the robotics engineer, like so many people with doctorates and master's degrees, is working as a street hustler on the main streets of, I think it's Chicago or New York, it's one of those.
Yeah,
well, it's supposed to be New York, but it was shot.
Okay, then that makes more sense.
The mean streets of Canada.
Exactly.
We're talking about a Ben Javeri.
That's right, who is Indian. Or
one
at least
fact, his last
so.
Name was different in the first movie.
What?
Yes.
Oh my god. Oh boy, that already just sets the stage, folks, for what we're dealing with. And so he is a, he's building little robots now as toys. And a toy manufacturer and distributor finds one of these and is like, oh, I love them, and I want you to build a lot of them for Christmas, and I need 1,000, of which Ben is completely unable to do because he's working out of what looks like a U-Haul that they painted white. And another street hustler standing next to him jumps in and says, yes, we can absolutely do it, and becomes his immediate partner. And he gets money from a loan shark. He says he's going to cut off his penis if he doesn't pay it back. And they hire people that are homeless and tell them they'll feed them McDonald's if they build the toy robots.
Yeah.
And I know, you guys, you can't make this shit up.
By the way, his partner is David St. Hubbins from Spinal Tap.
Yeah, Michael McKean.
Also known as the dad from Problem Child, which is how I recognized him.
Right.
And,
Well, we get, just because we're throwing things around.
Yeah.
The C-plot is that next door there's a bunch of diamonds being stored.
That's right. And I was getting that. That's a very important aspect of the plot. And that's because the warehouse in which they are building these robots with the trapped homeless people is a back door, essentially, like an underground tunnel to the bank vault where these diamonds are being held. And the people that are trying to steal the diamonds need to get Ben and his partner and the homeless people out of there, so they jump them. And they ruin all the shit. And then Ben's sad, and he writes his friends in Montana, and he's like, I'm so sad, they're going to cut off my friend's penis. And then they send him Johnny Five, the real thing, the big robot. And he's so great. He's as great as I remember as a child.
Johnny Five is alive.
He is alive. He is sentient. He has a cool little backpack that has like a wing glider in it. I mean, and it has a rainbow sticker on it. And so it's just really great. And then they build a bunch of robots, and Johnny Five gets loose because he's looking for input, and he breaks into a bunch of cars, and then he gets tricked by a man named Oscar, who is also part of the bank robbery people, and he tricks him, and he helps him break into the bank.
You
and
devolved
really
back to 10-year-old Candace midway through that. That's
so good.
You did.
And then.
That's exactly
and
how.
Then,
well,
then,
what?
Yeah, I just tell you how it happened. Yeah, I
texted. What happens ultimately is, Candace said, the warehouse that Michael McKean and Fisher Stevens is an Indian, which is, we'll talk about
that
later.
We're going to talk about that later.
Connects to a bank vault, and they want to use Johnny Five as a tool to rob the vault, like Candace said, where all these diamonds are being held. And at the same time, Johnny Five is... He's alive, and he's trying to figure out just where he fits in the world.
That's right. Okay. Where do we even begin?
At the beginning.
This is...
I'll tell you
this really is
begin.
As convoluted as Candace made it out to be, because I checked, and Johnny Five doesn't show up till 18 minutes into the movie.
Yes.
So there is a lot of buildup.
Yeah. Well, they... And again, they expect you to know, like, who Johnny Five is, but... I remember this being on cable, like, all the time back in the day, but never the first one.
Well, the first one wouldn't be, because it's scary. I remember when I first saw the first one, I was really upset, like, actually upset in my heart, because he was mean and bad. And I was like, no, he's not. He's a nice robot.
I thought in the first one, it was like, there were multiple Johnnies.
Yeah. He's part of, like, a whole squadron of, like, super soldiers.
Well, and that's where he gets his name. He's literally number 5 of, like, 20 or whatever.
Yeah.
And lightning strikes him in what is effectively the cover shot, like the poster shot.
Yeah.
And, by the way, Rifle was right. The original name is Ben Gibituya.
Oh, God.
Ben Gibituya? That would be his porno name. If Johnny Five was a pornography... That would be his name.
Yeah, I mean, he's making puns in both movies all the time. How does no one make a pun about them?
I will say, though, the first one, better cast. It's Ali Sheedy from
Breakfast Club.
Breakfast Club, thank you. And Steve Guttenberg.
Does that really make it better?
Michael McKean, Steve Guttenberg. I will tell you, in 86, when that came out, he had the juice.
So,
right?
the Stonecutters produced the first movie.
That's probably.
See, I even remembered that wrong, because I've only seen the first one time. I thought Steve Guttenberg, the other person, I thought that was Billy Crystal. Is that wrong?
I'll tell you what, only one of them has done blackface at the Academy Awards, and it was Billy Crystal.
No, well... Steve Guttenberg is like if you order Billy Crystal on Wish.com.
Made for TV, Billy Crystal.
You got Billy Crystal at home.
You're right, because he did the porn parody of The Search for Curly's Gold.
Oh, I'm sure.
That's City Slickers too. You found that gold in that sequel, girl.
Oh my goodness. I wonder where.
It was buried deep.
By the way,
in the porn parody of Short Circuit, Johnny Five is still looking for input.
I'm sure he is.
Focuses in and out. It becomes a POV shot whenever he comes in.
It's just not the same when the women have to wear an adapter.
That's right. Oh!
you're wrong, Daniel. As a woman, I can tell you this.
Mm.
Well, every man at the table's like, how do we respond to this?
You win the conversation if no one has a response.
Yay!
I do have one thing I want to say about Johnny Five. The actor who does the voiceover work is a puppeteer who's like works with the Muppets before, but he's done one other very famous voiceover part, and that's in Men in Black. He was the pug.
What? I didn't know that.
That was specifically for Candace.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Pugs are the best, y'all.
You don't like it? You can kiss my furry little butt.
I will say my favorite role was that he was Grimace and all that McDonald's nonsense that used to come out when we were kids.
Oh, there you go. You mean the one that the lame duck president would occasionally talk to?
Yes, he would.
You know, I'll tell you, something we should use next year for this is, since you mentioned Grimace, McDonald's has a great Halloween special called Ronald Scared Silly.
Oh, God.
Actually, what I thought you were going to say is Mac and Me, which also ends with a citizenship ceremony. Because the aliens at the end of Mac and Me become citizens, and Johnny Five, gold-plated, becomes a Trump candidate. Like a golden turlet.
He's the first robotic citizen.
Which we are told
alive.
Which we are told at one point, which is nonsense. utter nonsense.
My gosh.
Anyway, so I guess we can kind of get into the beginning. At the beginning, he's busking Dr. J.
Yeah, exactly. Fisher Stevens is busking with toys that look like Johnny Five.
I've never heard this word before. Busking?
Busking? You know, like street performers,
yeah.
Like guitarists singing for money.
I had no idea that had a word.
Yeah, yep. Buskers.
He was a...
He's educational.
Yeah. He's a street vendor in...
That's why
is
you're
it supposed to be New York?
It's supposed to be any city USA. But yeah, I think it's supposed to be Manhattan, they mentioned at one point.
Right.
It's Canada. I mean, you can smell the poutine on all these extras.
Well, either way...
And the free healthcare.
Either way, it actually happens with a clever long shot over the credits where... a toy Johnny Five is like in a department store just riding through there, and
it kind of mimics the shot in the first one where Johnny first becomes sentient and he's wandering around the lab. I actually watched the first one too this weekend.
Oh shit!
Because I'd only ever seen it on TV
Someone's
when I was a kid.
Extra credit.
Yeah.
He wants to be on the podcast, Mark. And it's your competition.
Well, I mean, what can I bring to the table? Whiskey and boobs. Challenge
there
me.
There you go.
Daniel, you're fired.
No, we love Daniel.
I'm going to push my... I'm pushing my chest together here.
I mean, Underwire that's in next mask. Yes.
There you go.
Candace is giving support to the whole podcast right now. but yeah, okay. So you just rewatched the first one. I have not seen it in nigh on 2 decades. So
I've never seen it.
So yeah, the first one, as we said, it's about a war... robot that gets struck by lightning, becomes sentient, and says, hey, I want to learn lots of stuff and dance to Saturday Night Fever.
It's like a non-metaphor?
Well, I mean, it's a very thinly veiled anti-war movie because, you know, Ally Sheedy is this huge hippie animal lover, and, you know, every time the lab contacts her to try and get it back, she says, you can't have your war machine back.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Reagan's America, animal lovers were definitely a negative.
Yeah. I mean, this is 1980.
So were people with AIDS.
That's right.
Yeah.
I mean.
I have a mask on, so you can't tell the fucking face I'm making.
No, I can. I mean, I get it. I mean, we're killing Daniel with humor. Right?
That and White Claw. So.
I mean, he is a 35-year-old woman.
Yes. And he, you know, and he should treat himself.
They should.
I'm a high schooler who snuck things from the fridge.
Please, it's not Smirnoff Ice. Okay. Or Zima.
Or Zima. Everybody's talking about Zima. Zima.
Oh, that's funny. But yeah, I mean, I do remember, like, the military scene. Like, here he has his weapons, but they're very rarely used. This is much more kid-oriented. The other one is a comedy, sure.
No, he doesn't have his weapons at all. He dismantled them, and instead he has the utility box with rainbow sticker on it. It has all these fun things, and yes, he took away his gun and all that stuff.
Well, I should be clear. He doesn't have weapons, but he does fight people.
Oh,
but
yeah.
It's like hand-to-hand combat, which is fun.
Yeah.
Like,
and using remote control planes and shit.
Can we?
That's something.
Can we talk about how Johnny Five's introduced in this movie, which is... he comes in that big cargo box from...
he gets shipped FedEx.
Yeah, exactly. And he comes out in all those, like, you know, packaged peanuts. And then we see him, like, first and foremost, he knows Fisher Stevens. And then we see him, like, read the Hound of Baskervilles real fast and going, I think the chauffeur did it. He did, even though there's no chauffeur in the Hound of Baskervilles.
That's because they didn't want to spoil it.
It was... 100-year-old book at that point.
That doesn't matter.
I would say, you must really hate Hudson Hawk. I mean, who gives a shit about any of it? Now, I will say, the quick reading, that's Data shit on Star Trek, too. It's just, I, as someone who's going to put down, and this is like a humble brag, like dick measuring humble brag, 125 books so far this year.
Well, laddie freaking die!
I am so literate, it annoys my spouse.
I'm reading The Manchurian Candidate right now.
How is it?
It's really good.
Is it, like, absorbing?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's...
Like, you feel like a different person? Should we contact someone?
I read Doomsday Clock via DC Comics graphic novel recently, so there you go.
The Universe app is good.
I read a book at work about OCTs and
the employee handbook doesn't count.
They made me watch the video about sexual harassment.
So, can we talk about the two human characters? We've touched on Fisher Stevens and how racist that is, but
I mean,
Michael
we
McKean.
We barely touched on it, actually. So just so you'll know, literally an hour before watching this film for the first time in like 25 years, if you would have asked me, Candace, who is your favorite Indian actor of all time? I'd have been like, that guy from Short Circuit. He seems so nice.
Not Aziz Ansari, Mary Kondabolu.
No, because I was like, he brought me such joy as a child. To which then the group sitting here texted me back, because I was listening to the Ace Ventura podcast, which if you haven't done so, you need to definitely do it. About the fact they were like, oh, this movie isn't racist at all. And I was like, what are they talking about? So I was like, what do you guys mean? And they were like, well, obviously the Indian character. And I was like, huh? I had no idea that it's a white dude.
It is
and not
indeed.
Just any white dude, a really white dude. Like, the guy from Hackers kind of white dude. And I felt sad because everything I know is a lie now.
Let me explain how the Constitution works. It'd be really sad. He's also from two previous episodes we've done, like you mentioned, Hackers, and also Super Mario Brothers. He's Iggy.
Yep. He was one of the henchmen, Koopa's henchmen, I believe.
That's right.
It's getting worse all the time.
Now and again, like, we can blame him all you want, but also they had never heard of an Indian person before. So they just hired white people to, I guess we call this brown face? Because he's also, like, very makeuped up.
Yeah, it wasn't like, oh, just get a tan and you'll be all right. I mean, this is, like, 1960s con-style makeup.
That's right.
This is bad.
I mean, to be fair, his head ridges away from being a Klingon. The proud tradition of Star Trek and blackface. But, I mean, they at least hired a black... Oh, he's also in another movie we've done, My Science Project.
What was that?
Oh, My Science Project is the one where these kids go to Area 51, they steal technology from a UFO, and they go back in time, and they start... You must not have been on this episode, buddy, because this is a weird fucking... It's John Stockwell and Fisher Stevens.
So, can we talk about why Johnny Five is in this movie and what's going on?
Because he was very popular with the fans, so they had to...
Indeed.
Because he's a robot. He's cool.
Dude, and I will say, for a 1988 robot, this thing is fucking incredible.
I mean, comparatively, you had the robot from Rocky IV, which is like the second best robot to this.
Oh, the one that Rocky's uncle was trying to fuck constantly?
Hey, Rocky, I made it talk like a woman. We're legal.
Oh my god, I never picked up on that.
I glued its gears together, if you get my drift.
Does he really say that?
Yeah,
what?
Yes,
sure, he does.
There's a reason why it's not making the director's cut.
Well,
he does really make it a woman, though.
So the whole the first act, the whole plot is
Paulie's fucking that robot.
Yes, Paulie is indeed fucking that robot. The whole plot in the first act is that Ben is trying to.
Sorry, that's why when Rocky and the wife Adrian abandoned the kids on Christmas Day, they keep referring to the robot as Auntie. Because at that point, they could hear the constant fucking from upstairs. You're welcome, America.
So Ben is trying to build toys that are based on Johnny Five from the first movie. And like we've said, and this is like the first 20 minutes, he gets interest from a executive at a toy company.
Yeah, she's a toy buyer.
Right, exactly. And he's like, well, I can get you that order in 1993. And this is, what year did this come out?
88.
88, okay. So somehow the characters in the first movie hear about his plight, I guess you'd
call
it.
Yeah, that's never explained.
No, he writes his friend. He says that he wrote them because he said the only people who know I'm here are my friends Stephanie and whatever his name is in Montana, because I wrote them. Because he told them about the fact they had been beat up and robbed after when they chased off the homeless people.
Either way, they send Johnny Five to him to help him build these toy robots that are based on him.
That's right.
And we get a whole bunch of scenes after that where we're like introduced to his abilities, like how he can control them via remote and a bunch of things. That's kind of amusing because he talks like Crazy Eddie.
Well, we should back up a few things that are really cool about this movie, because obviously the robots are all great, but Johnny Five, the miniature Johnny Fives are also pretty impressive. And
they are.
The opening sequence is something out of, I don't know, like a Wallace and Gromit bit, where this little robot goes into a department store and just keeps, essentially he must be a remote control that does nothing other than go forward, but he then kind of Mr. Magoo's into the top floor of this buying office in downtown, and, you know, the woman at the top is a woman named Cynthia Gibb, that's the actress, who, if you've ever seen the old Fame TV show, she's one of the stars of Fame. And
there,
she appeared,
wait. There was a Fame TV show?
What? There was. For 5 years.
The Fame TV show was amazing. I literally learned everything I know about dance from the Fame TV show.
Then you might know her. She was Holly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was amazing.
I never knew there was a TV show based on that movie.
You're missing out. You need to find it. You need to binge it. It's
Glee. Glee with like Merkin.
Yeah.
Well, it's Glee with talent.
It's Glee with talent.
Do they write their own songs?
No, but they do choreograph their own dances.
And she's also in the JCBD movie Death Warrant, which is pretty good. And she played Karen Carpenter when she was thin in the Karen Carpenter story.
Ooh.
Oh, I mean, come on. Let's be fair. This was the year after this movie, so she was also Gypsy opposite of Bette Midler. So, but yeah. So she's good, and she's harried, and she keeps trying to sell novelties as though they're toys, and, you know, Christmas is coming, like it always is.
The kids want high-tech this year,
right?
Apparently. I gotta say, and I was a kid at this time, so I don't remember this being a thing, though, but did they ever make those actual robots as toys? Because that would have been banging. I want one of those.
I'm shocked they didn't.
It kind of reminds me of, what was that thing that was packaged with the NES back
Rob,
when that was
Rob.
Rob.
Rob the robot.
It kind of looked like that.
Yeah, no, I mean, you're not wrong. But Candace, you're 100%. Like, this is a movie that I'm sure came out around, what, Thanksgiving? Like, that's what this feels like.
It doesn't matter what time of year it would have come out. If you had a movie that had a toy in it that was as cool as that, why would you not make a toy to then sell? This is when kids played with toys.
Well, and also,
I'd like you to know that Daniel also just did a mask change.
I know.
Like a costume change mid-Oscars. Please continue.
But this is 88, man. Like, there were Ghostbusters toys. Like, we're talking He-Man.
There were every toy.
I mean, Doff My Cap to the Toys That Made Us, the show on Netflix.
Oh, that's such a good series.
Oh, I mean, you want to just melt into your couch and just watch some old nostalgia? Like, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles commercial from 1993.
Heroes in a Half Shell.
Turtle Power.
They had subterranean sewer hockey. There is my favorite to follow on Twitter is a bot that just searches Wikipedia for entries that you can sing to the tune of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Like the XKCD soundtrack?
That's where they got it from.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. But that's my life right now. How are you doing?
You guys have a lot of time on your hands, gentlemen.
We've all been working from home. I mean, what can I say?
Yeah, you've been working with people.
Okay. I work at the hospital. We don't work from home.
Let's skip ahead.
We're going to give you your prostate exam virtually. So I'm going to ask you to spread them cheekies and just I'm going to poke you.
Let's skip ahead a little bit. I mean, Johnny Five comes. He's helping Ben.
Yes.
And then his whole thing is that he wants input, which
leads into
the second act. But first and foremost, one of the things that triggers him is Mr. Rogers with his ventriloquist dummy.
I mean,
that's a moment. It's almost as painful as the two books he eventually, later in the film, picks out at the bookstore and reads.
Ah, yes, Frankenstein and Pinocchio.
Yeah. I remember crying at that part where he's holding the books and he's locked up. But anyways, Ben and them decide it's probably best to lie to Number Five and not tell him that he's in a major metropolis, Toronto. So that way he doesn't go out. That way he stays focused on the
otherwise,
boys.
Otherwise, she's going to run into David Cronenberg, which is going to lead to all sorts of problems.
But eventually he does figure out that he's in a big city, right?
How does he again?
Because hungover Michael McKean wakes up and he goes, man, this is the noises of, oh, shit. He goes, we are in a town?
Yeah, well, he goes, the people in this city are crazy because he's reading the newspaper.
That's right,
and
yes.
And then they're like, he's like, I'm in a city. And he's like, no, I didn't say that. I said, you know, your mother's a toaster or whatever. And he goes over and he wipes the window and sees there's a city outside. And you hear it to the tune of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, actually, which is kind of adorable. Yeah. And then he hauls ass out of there, which is awesome.
It is.
And he meets my favorite people of the whole movie, which is the Los Locos gang.
Oh, yes.
If we were doing this live, guys, I would absolutely take a denim jacket and make myself a Los Locos jacket.
I mean, and the game that they like, you know what, we're stealing these speakers. I mean, we're repairing the speakers, and we're taking them out, and we need your help.
These people have hired us to fix their radios.
He's like, and we have so many cars. We have so many cars. We can't even go home and see our little babies and stuff.
Oh, it's great.
Oh.
And then Johnny Five ends up covered in graffiti from that.
Dude,
it's naughty art.
They lower him. He comes in.
He looks amazing. And he has his own vest, by the way. It's a leather vest. And so he's, part of the gang now.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe their slogan was, Los Locos kick your ass. Los Locos kick your face. Los Locos kick your balls into outer space.
That's right. You remembered that correctly. So catchy.
It is.
I mean, I remember when I watched it, and I hadn't watched it in 25 years, I sang it along with the movie. So, I'm sure as a kid, when I was 9, that was hilarious.
Oh, yeah, big time.
They said, balls! Ah!
Yeah, so balls was what amused you, not ass.
Well, you know, it's not much different now, so.
Oh, there you go.
I promise I'm not going to just do this forever, but it's Moses Jaffe of Malone, Iron Nation, South Dakota.
Orange County Roller Derby, culture of
the Czech Republic, Turtle Power.
It's @wiki_TMNT.
That's all they do every day. They just randomly tweet every half hour another wiki title you can sing to the theme song.
Do people make money off that?
Probably somehow in a way that I don't understand. The only thing I understand on the internet is OnlyFans.
So, oh, yeah.
I get it.
I have a lot of cast members that are OnlyFans.
Who's going to volunteer for our OnlyFans?
We could do it together as a group.
Anyone want to
have a live stream? We do the
money. Why when I was naked, we lost money?
Anyone want to see my butt? I mean,
no,
if you pay me.
No one says we had to be naked. We could be funny. We could be friends. We could show merriment and friendship. I mean, that's pretty rare. Just saying.
I'm listening to you. I just take my money.
That is clearly not where your nipples are, Nick.
Here?
Oh.
Are they really that far apart?
I saw you touching yourself a little lower.
I can't not stop looking.
Okay, so
I feel like I need support. My mask is going down.
Okay, so
need two of those masks.
In the
wait, Nick's mask has an underwire, y'all? Like he's a D-cup or something?
I mean, since I was in high school, girls have been telling me you need support.
That's true.
That's true.
That's true.
I'm not going to diss support when you have a powerful chin.
That's true. It's to support your beard.
It's a chin.
It's a beard support.
It's a beard support.
Okay, so we're in the second act of this movie. We're in the second act of this movie where Johnny Five goes out and
is alive.
What? Yep. He joins a gang. He busts some speakers.
And he also goes to confession.
That's right. He goes confession. Oh, that's a sad moment.
That's such a good scene.
That's a really good scene. As someone who was raised Catholic, but my parents never took me to church, I really, really connect with that scene. So.
And I'm really good with the guilt, so I feel the Catholic.
I know, you do, you feel it.
I mean,
but that's when he also meets Oscar, which is an important character.
Yes.
Yeah. So tell us about Oscar, Danny.
Well, what happened?
Look at your notes. Section C, paragraph 3, subsection A. Yes.
It says Google is allowed to do whatever they want to me, up to and including anal penetration, but...
What? No, you're looking at the OnlyFans. Go back.
Okay, so let's
go back.
Yes.
This is an actor named Jack Weston. This is literally the last movie he did. A couple years before, he was in Dirty Dancing. I believe he's the dad who does the abortion.
Seen that movie. I'm sorry, what?
There is an abortion scene in that movie.
You should see it. It's a good movie.
It's not a good movie, but are you kidding?
It's a fine movie. Fuck you. He's also in Can't Stop the Music, which is pretty good, too.
Wait, the Village People movie?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, good lord.
There is a Village People movie that we have not done on Cineprop yet.
Hey, it's better than the Kiss movie.
It is much better than the Kiss
there
movie.
There is a Kiss movie.
I watched a movie the other day where Gene Simmons was the villain. It's called Runaway, and it's about robots.
Directed by Michael Crichton.
And Tom Selleck and his mustache are in it, and they're amazing.
That might be the thing that kills me.
What, the mustache?
I mean,
well,
it's also in Gator, which is good.
If we could rewind to the Catholic scene where Johnny Five is in the confession booth.
I'm gonna go get vodka.
All right, yeah. Go get your funny juice there.
You need me to reach anything.
Well, Johnny Five is in the confession booth where he's talking about just how people have treated him in the city while he's been outside, which is like, people laugh at me. They call me names and they don't treat me with respect. Not a direct quote, but there's that whole scene, though, where the priest is like, oh, well, I've been called things myself. And then
it's a good scene. I'm just poking the bear.
It's a great scene, and it ends with the priest kicking Johnny Five out of the church.
Yeah.
Because he thinks it's a remote-controlled robot whose owner is playing games.
That's right. But I mean, like, the whole... I think we've mentioned this, but the thrust of the movie is they need to make 10,000 robots or 50,000, whatever it is.
It's just 1,000.
Just 1,000.
That's
right.
All it is.
By within 30 days, yada, yada, yada. The homeless people are scared off by the thugs who are trying to rob the next store where there's, like, the something-something diamonds.
That's all still in the first act.
We're
in
Vanderbilt.
I get that. And Johnny Five is there to help them catch up. And so when he wanders off, it's bad for business. And so Michael McKean's arc in this, John Ritter or Fred Ritter, the least talented Ritter, Jason Ritter, I guess.
Yeah.
is to like get Johnny Five to make more of these things. By the way, there's no resolution on that part. He does not make the remaining 500 missing robots.
Can we talk about the scene where Johnny Five is arrested? Like, they actually put handcuffs on a robot.
Oh, dude. He's dressed like he's in a Talking Heads video with, like, giant shoulders and, like...
No, he's dressed like he's going down New York Times Square in the 80s and is just going to flash people. It's a giant raincoat.
Then, I mean, he does the lineup, he's wearing the numbers, and he's compared to, like, C-3PO and R2-D2, and they're like, that's the guy! And
is that before or after the scene where somebody, takes him to a boardroom and tries to buy him, and he's like, something that sold this property is a slave?
No, so that is before, because that's after he goes to the bookstore, ransacks the bookstore, reading input, and that's how he gets arrested.
Right.
But then, when he gets back, he's like, oh, you know, it would have been horrible had we, you know, I can't believe they're treating a piece of equipment like this that costs millions of dollars. And he's like, excuse me? And then he finds out that he's actually worth $11 million, which back in, like, 1988, I'm sure it's, like, a lot. I mean, that's pretty much enough to cover my student loans. So saying that, you know, it's good money. And, so then that's when later, you know, shortly after that is when they go back out into society and he tries to sell him.
And when he's released on bail, that's where he got the two books that he had kept from the bookstore. Also, this is a great scene where he's talking about the bookstore and sees it and goes, there's megabytes of input. And I'm just like, 1980s.
Yeah. Well, much like in when he first jumps out of the box in the very first, in the first 18 minutes of the movie, he says he's added to his memory banks 500 megabytes.
No.
Y'all, 500 megabytes. That's dummy thick.
He's just firing on all cylinders then, isn't he?
At least three C's thick.
You gotta lower that Johnny Five. See that wagon he's dragging?
Oh, mind you.
I mean,
are we all?
I mean, it's that COVID 500 megabytes that I'm carrying around with me.
God.
Oh, God help us all. I mean, but yeah, okay. So at this point, we have like nine plots rotating around each other. It's why 80s movies are very hard to follow. Everyone took a line. Everyone blew a rail.
Yeah, it's the code. He can do this, and we can drop him to that, and yeah, and then he does this. And then...
What if two Canadians are villains who are trying to blow up something, I guess?
Jeremy, this is actually an intervention. We're here to talk to you about your coke use.
No.
Blowing rails.
Jeremy, are you a cocaine addict or are you Canadian? I mean, I just met you.
Why not both?
Okay.
Yeah, I just met you, and this is crazy. Well, are you a coke user or Canadian?
Call me maybe.
I mean, either way.
Well, after the second act, which is Johnny Five out in the real world, we get the whole heist thing that this movie's supposed to be about, where the
Oscar.
Yeah, where Oscar's using him to dig into the vault, and then he kidnaps Mike McKeon and Ben Fisher and locks them in that Chinese restaurant's freezer.
The Duwa Diddy restaurant or whatever.
Before that, Ben is apparently trying to flirt with the woman that he met by Johnny Five, and there's that whole scene... We're at a restaurant and Johnny Five's like putting
he's prompting him. It's the whole Romeo and Juliet.
Cyrano de Bergerac.
Yeah, that's it. You read the books, you fucking know.
I fucking know. Dr. Hoffman, he fucking knows.
He fucking knows, just saying. I have a broad class in the front. And because the way I was sitting, it was coming into me. We're fine now, continue. Everything's fine.
Go on.
Everything's normal here.
Save it for the OnlyFans.
Ladies, you know what I'm talking about.
Right.
The lady listeners understand my struggle, so please continue.
I'll probably.
I mean, it's better than accidentally unhooking yourself in the middle of a podcast with three other dudes, and you're just like, and then all of a sudden, Lefty drops happening. So do they have names, or is Siegfried just hanging lower than Raw right now?
Back to the robot talk, gentlemen. Back to the robot talk. So many robots.
No, I mean,
he's being prompt.
I mean, speaking of the girls. I wish there was another woman in here to do anything other than be in love with Dr. J. Because all she does is like, I'm being harassed at work. Hey, an Indian dude. Like, that's her role in this movie.
Yeah. Well, I mean, listen. It was a different time. And I know people get all pissy about stuff like this. And they're like, blah, blah, blah. Y'all, come on. I mean, you know what you're dealing with. You know when this was. This was a fine part for when she was an actress and when this role was written. Don't be a cunt. Just enjoy it for what it is.
Although I will say this is better than the alternative where there was a lady, Johnny Five, at the end. Joan Five shows up with a bow. She has a bow.
Is that a real thing?
No.
Oh, thank God. I was horrified for like
You can log into the OnlyFans account and see.
I'm on the Joan Five fans account.
Hey, rule 34. You never know.
DeviantArt.
We're going to go on DeviantArt. It's on DeviantArt. It's definitely
input.
Right?
There you go.
My God.
Well,
can't drink through a mask.
The good thing about this...
Same.
The good thing about this is Ben is equally as awkward as anyone. I mean, I don't remember the character's name, but she's...
Giamatti. Or unless you're in the first movie, then it's Ben I don't remember his
name. Her name is Sandy.
Sandy, okay.
Sandy Benettoni.
She was clearly the one who was more, capable and put together.
Was she, though?
No.
Did you see that outfit she was wearing for their second date? That blue monstrosity that had, like... epaulets, and they have like little hanging tassels on the side.
It was the 80s.
It was worse than the 80s. It looked like a Mexican restaurant exploded on her.
She's about to break into a music video.
Yeah, she was.
I mean, even the first date with the hat, that was pretty cute.
Either way,
yeah, that's cute.
Hat is cute.
She is just
Annie Lennox vibe. Yeah.
She is just way more competent and way more put together than Ben is. As a human being.
I mean, I know some people who are engineers. That's how they date.
It is true.
Right. I mean...
Yeah. By the way, engineers are the worst patients. As someone who has taken care of a lot of patients through the years, engineers will come in with like a 4-page dissertation, like graph paper, drawings, and then they're like... And then everything you tell them, they question because they are convinced they have like 8 degrees and they totally know more than you. And I love them for it, but I just want to shake the shit out of them sometimes. Sometimes they do know more.
They probably enjoy that. Don't give them.
Yeah.
We love the shaking.
No, they just want a woman to touch them.
Yeah, exactly. Human contact. I want that. So there's a scene where Sandy...
I just want to say, because we're recording while recording, a lot of these scenes take place in what looks like a giant mall. And you remember people... I mean, we're kids of the 80s and 90s, and like just being...
Why are you looking at me, Nick?
Because
Candace is hoisting the
81.
Girls.
81. Okay, I was 82.
Okay.
And I'm 85, all right. And he's 91.
87.
Okay.
Oh, okay, good. Well, all right. I was like, oh my God, we've been sexually harassing a child. Okay, Daniel's fine. Everything's fine. We're good. Continue.
No, I was just saying, like, I love... just seeing malls active again. Because, until 2006, that was our jam.
Remember arcades?
Oh, God. Oh, yes.
Oh, yes.
All right, and for those of you listening here in Georgia, do you remember the Gold Rush at South Lake Mall?
Oh, that was the jam, y'all.
That was, and it was right down the, and, like, three stores down was, it was called Frankenstein's, and it was a hot dog and beer place in the mall. And I remember my dad and I used to go, and he would just be like, I'll be here. Here's some quarters. Have fun. And I was like, this is the best life ever.
I grew up in the burbs of Columbia, South Carolina, so.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Even shit like, okay, first of all, of course, Chuck E. Cheese was your animatronic hellhole that had video games. But then, about midway through the early 90s, like 93, someone got the idea of, like, what if kids could die in a ball pit? And so then there was Discovery Zone. And Discovery Zone was the greatest place on Earth. And then McDonald's said, we sell bad food. And so then they came up with Leaps and Bounds, which was even bigger and crazier. And I just remember these things as though they're engraved in my mind like GoldenEye 64. Like, this is... And then they're like, because it's our generation, they're like, those people have money and need alcohol. Let's have Dave and Buster's. But Dave and Buster's didn't scratch the same itch.
It's because they don't have a ball pit.
I mean,
yeah.
Can you imagine adults in a ball pit?
Yes, I can.
Hell
yes.
Yeah.
I've been to conventions where there are giant ball pits.
You give drunk adults a ball pit, they're going to go in it.
So, by the way...
Someone's going to drown in
As an adult, and I don't know if they still allow this, but it used to be called Dixieland Fun Park. But now it's called the Fun Spot, and it's in Fayetteville, Georgia. And they used to let adults go. They have an indoor ball pit in the back, and they used to let adults get into it. By the way, they just finished filming Karate Kid there. All those carnival scenes, that was filmed there.
Cobra Kai?
Yeah, that's it.
Oof.
Yeah. That show's amazing,
Daniel.
What are you talking about?
Yeah, no, the show's really good.
Have you seen it?
I've never seen anything.
Oh my shit,
Kid.
You need to... What?
I have never seen anything.
Daniel is down. He is down.
Yeah, we need, okay,
I,
we need to watch that.
I was once in the same room as Ralph Macchio, but that's been about it.
Yeah, you were both ordering Subway sandwiches at the time.
Yes.
And I thought you were going to say Ralph Macchio was making the sub sandwiches.
He's an artiste. Wait, well, a sandwich artiste?
He did turn around and was like, hey, I'm $3 short.
I'm from
Can
a
you?
Show.
Oh my God.
I'm from a movie you may have seen before. I don't watch pornography.
All right. So the third act of Short Circuit.
What movie are we doing?
The robot movie.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
Back
so I got this. So the last act of Real Steel.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh boy.
Pacific Rim.
Terminator 4.
Pacific Rim is the best movie ever, by the way. Please continue.
It's a good movie.
Pacific Rim?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a great movie.
It's amazing.
Yeah,
movie.
It's a good movie.
We also did the Power Rangers movie, which is technically a robot movie, but for white people.
It's technically a Pacific Rim movie, if you really
I've
want
gotten
to
drunk it. With Barbara Gordon, who is the voice of whatever
no,
her
she's
name
the
is.
The Oracle.
Yeah.
She's Commissioner Gordon's daughter.
That Gordon. Right. Act three. Please continue, Daniel, the one
okay.
person who is holding this show together. Thank
Lies!
You. Thank you. Thank
okay,
you.
Enjoy editing this bucket.
Don't edit any of it.
Fuck you, Nick.
Yeah,
I'll put the unedited version on the Patreon.
That's for the Patreon. That's the OnlyFans material.
Yeah.
Yes!
So the third act is Ben and Michael McKean being stuck in the freezer, and then Oscar making Johnny Five dig to the bank vault where the jewels are because this is
Oscar.
Yeah, nope, that's what happens. And then one thing that happens after they succeed is they try to destroy Johnny Five by like beating the hell out of him.
That scene
Dude.
Is
really
fucking
upsetting.
Traumatic.
That
yes.
is really upsetting.
Dude, man, because again, he is, you know, a brilliant machine and all that stuff, but he also has, like, the mind of, like, a clever six-year-old, right? Like, because he asks questions. He's, like, he's an innocent. He's a naif, right? Like, a waif, rather. And it's just so traumatic to see the shit kicked out. Like, it's literally just a, like, brutal, like, he gets curb-stomped, this poor fucker.
Oh,
it's really
yeah. There's a shot where like some fluid sprays out on one of his attackers to make it look like blood.
And what's sad is it's the attacker that actually doesn't want to destroy
yeah.
that because he's the person who appreciates the fact that he and acknowledges that he might be like an AI type sentient being,
mm-hmm.
and he's the one that's most horrified by it. But the other guy's like the bully, and he's like, "No, you're gonna fucking beat him out." And it's sad because he's the one who delivers kind of the killing blow, if you will, into
right.
his battery box. And
one
that's
of the,
really upsetting.
Well, I mean, it's like the one scene they asked Scorsese to direct. Like, he's doing like some like Robert De Niro kicks right
yeah.
to the like, right to that 500 megs. Like, I mean, and every dude wants like a big expansion, but you don't want to get kicked in it.
Oh my God. And then they hit him in the eye, and that really upsets me.
Oh, that's
yeah.
the one.
That's
by
it.
The end
that,
of it.
That really
yeah.
like, I'm not going to say I cried. But I got.
I wouldn't blame you if you did.
But I
no.
need to say that I got Dude. Legitimately really upset, and I think
yeah.
had I been drinking, I probably would have cried.
Sure.
This and Lithgow going to Harry Anderson's, we don't even want you anymore. Like those fucking scenes break me the right the fuck out. I'm like,
I know. So
fun. I'm like rending my garments. I'm like pulling out.
Also, that scene in Air Bud where the kid's trying to make the golden retriever go away.
Oh, or Homeward Bound, where the golden falls in the pit and he's like crawling himself
stop,
out.
Stop! I'm not prepared for this. I didn't sign up for that. You better shut your fucking
or
mouth.
Or Artax sinking in the mud pit.
No, you know what? You know what? Homeward Bound is worse. But anyway,
I thought y'all were my friends. Why are you doing this to me?
Don't worry, we get some spicy wings in you soon.
Now I'm all depressed just thinking about Homeward Bound, but.
Everybody
Artax!
Is talking at me. I don't hear the words they're saying.
Anyway, Johnny Five gets almost destroyed, and then they're recovered, but they arrest Ben because of everything Johnny Five's done?
No, it's because they found that the bank vault has been broken into, so the cops travel the tunnel in which has been made, and they come up through the opening of the tunnel, which leads into their warehouse, which is
right.
the reason why they're trying
the
to get
workshop.
Them out.
The workshop, okay.
And actually, the guy with the silk shirt, Ritter, whatever his name is,
yeah.
he sees this through the window, so he doesn't go in. He takes a run for it. So the girl and Ben, they get locked up, and Ritter goes running, and he finds Johnny Five all fucked up, and he rips his silk shirt to try to save him, to try to, like, stop.
Can we talk about the scene where he finds Johnny Five, and Johnny Five's voice box is broken, so he has to write how he's feeling on chalk?
So rough.
Yeah.
There was a sacred stone.
The only way this could get worse is if it's like Sarah McLachlan.
Really careful, you.
I will remember.
No, if you like in the arms of, it's obviously, it's always in the arms of an angel. Well, that is the moment when you're just like, you're crying real hard. That's the plan.
Spoiler, we do get a song later, but it's a shit song because Jim Steinman is.
I just like to point out that the Netflix just came out on TV and it's highlighted Daddy.
Who's your daddy girl?
It's the demon Lucy. From. Yeah, Lucy.
That's great. I'm sorry, I was distracted by shiny things. Please continue.
Disenchanted. We do get a shit song later after Johnny Five is repaired, but before that, we get a scene where he encounters Mike McKeon and is writing chalk like, dying, get Ben.
Oh,
yeah. Okay, Ben's with the cops, you fix, and then he looks at a Radio Shack as to where they'll get the parts, and...
and the Radio Shack clinic is like rolling up and saying, now is my time to shine! He's like... You might as well play the A-Team music at that point. Da, 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 da. He's like grabbing like the tiniest wrench, like fixing this shit.
Yep. I love it when a plan comes together.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, there's something inherently like funny.
It's Manic Mike, the one who we'd seen earlier on the TV. It's his store. So it's not a Radio Shack technically. Well, no, it is Radio, because they show Radio Shack.
Yeah.
But it's Manic Mike from the commercial.
So back in the day in the New York in the 80s, and I don't remember this personally.
In Toronto.
I remembered this from other things. There was this guy named Crazy Eddie who ended up going to jail.
Yeah.
And that's exactly his persona.
Why did he go to jail?
Fraud.
Like they all do.
Yeah,
I thought it was going to be something way more scandalous.
Yeah, no.
No.
I was like, what could it be?
Pyramid
he's like,
scheme.
I know,
he's
just like
lies.
Fraud.
Well, I mean, it was a pretty big deal back in the day, but... Anyway, they fix Johnny Five at the Radio Shack, and there's that scene where he's typing on the computer going, no, don't do that! Okay, we're good. But anyway, after that, Mike McKeon describes, like, what's been going on, and Johnny Five gets pissed off because it's like, oh, they didn't kill the humans, but they wanted to destroy me.
Yeah, so then... comes the greatest montage scene ever. And with a song, I Need a Hero. And I gotta tell you, that is like a moment where I was so fucking pumped up when I was watching it. I was like, fucking get them. And he did. He went on a montage of revenge.
I'm just gonna say,
whenever I do a montage of revenge from now on, I will also play that song in honor of Johnny Five.
I'm just gonna say it. In a 50-year career, Jim Steinman has never once written good lyrics.
That song is fucking great,
that
and I will not hear
amazing.
Any different.
You are a dumb bitch for saying that. I'm going to fight you. When,
that's like...
When this show is over, we are
it's
fighting.
Almost on par with a Rocky montage. You're just like, fuck yeah, Johnny Five, kick some ass.
I know. And it's so believable. I really believe that he is... He's mad. And when his little eye goes red, I, like, lose my shit.
Well, he
and
just...
And he gets the crane, and he, like, sucks up...
He
you
does
know,
the taxi driver thing where he puts a mohawk on his head.
Yes. Well, listen, it's every awesome. Trust me, he did what every scorn woman has ever done. He cuts his hair, he dyes it, he puts on like his flyest jewelry, and he's like, I'm gonna go fucking catch a bitch.
I'm gonna stab a bitch.
Yeah. Well, first you catch him, then you stab.
Well, then you Reservoir Dogs.
That's a great movie.
Better song than anything Jim Steinman's ever written.
Damn, did he fuck your mom or something?
Right?
Shit.
He's just a shit.
Who hurt you, Daniel? Who
he's
hurt you?
He stole a girlfriend. We're there.
Daniel, show me on the doll where Steinman hurt you.
Right about here.
I mean, there's just a lot of butt stuff. There's just more butt stuff.
Back to the OnlyFans.
Now. I do want to say one thing. He's such a piss poor songwriter that.
God, I'm gonna go pee because you're annoying the shit out of me right now. I'm so mad at you. Oh, for real.
Actually, then I'm gonna go ahead and stop that bit.
We should get to the end here. At this point, the villains are captured. Johnny Five is bleeding, and Michael McKean's trying to survive him long enough to get him to bed.
Mr. Manic, you do not know your fluids. This is battery fluid.
Yeah. And so we have like this weird, vaguely medical transfusion-y scene. And again, this is heartrending shit.
Oh,
like,
well, first and foremost, he does capture Oscar and the people who are trying to rob the vault, but he's running on auxiliary power. So
that's right.
After that happens, he's basically dying.
And another thing to give the filmmakers credit for, like, Johnny Five has a timer on his battery for when, you know, once that runs out, he's dead. And this is not, like, the typical movie thing where, like, I actually just saw Goldfinger this week because it was back in theaters.
Classic.
There's a timer that starts at, like, 300, and it takes, like, 10 minutes for it to go down.
That's right.
Whereas in this,
and 007, if I recall.
Yeah. Where in this, he has a countdown of 10 minutes. Like, you'll see it 1 minute at 5 minutes, and in the next scene, it'll be at 3 minutes, and you're like, holy shit, where did those 2 minutes go?
Yeah,
this timer fucking flies, and you're like, holy shit, my God.
And it keeps real time pretty well. Yeah.
But anyway, there's that scene where Johnny Five's given the paddles by Ben and trying to bring him back to life because his power's gone, and
but they've installed like a new battery. It's just dead or something. Like,
I don't even think they
installed.
No, they
don't even
battery.
Do that.
Yeah,
he's
running on fumes.
Yeah, he goes goodbye, Benjamin, and then the EMT runs up. He grabs the paddles from him, and then it's like, I'm gonna put this on, and the EMT's like, everybody step back, because by the way, if you're touching something metal when you go into those paddles, you're going to electrocute everybody fucking there, by the way.
There's that scene where there's that scene where he's asking about, what's happened to his auxiliary power? And they're like, what do you mean?
He used it all up. It's gone.
Yeah. His backup power, it's dead.
I mean, and then he revives, he blinks, and then we get a citizenship scene.
Oh, he comes back to life, and then he gets rebuilt, and the ending is just the most glorious thing ever. It's one of the, you know, screw Citizen Kane, screw Pulp Fiction, screw Star Wars. This is the best ending scene
this
ever.
This is Chewie gets his medal kind of deal.
I was going to say, that's exactly
it.
At least the non-human gets a medal this time.
It's true. He is the first robotic citizen, which I'd like to point out means that the robot in Rocky IV was not.
He's an illegal. He was rounded up.
She was an illegal.
That's right. She was an illegal fuck slave. You know, like one of the ones that...
It's like a child bride. Like a mail order bride.
Seagal has tied up in his basement. He's a scumbag.
So we... What happens at the end is there's a... Citizenship.
Holy shit, how many white claws have you had, Daniel? You're like fucked
He's
up.
He's enough
dude.
To run for the head of the PTA.
Yes.
Oh, okay, go ahead. Yeah. You good.
You know what? I'm just so pissed off on behalf of my child that I don't have any children now. What happens at the end is Ben's doing a citizenship ceremony, and then Johnny Five's there in gold plating, and then it ends with him going, how do I feel? I feel alive.
Then that's it.
And he stops in a mid-80s jump, which as it always should be. Yeah. It was amazing.
I will say, the only one who does it better is Police Squad, where they pretend like it is, and the actors just have to hold still for the entire credits.
Like while they're pouring a drink, and the drink keeps going.
Yeah. And so if you've ever seen Naked Gun, the TV show that it was based on for one season is called Police Squad, and they always do that at the end, like, we caught the bad guy! And so, like, the intern has to hold their, like, pose the entire time.
Oh, really? Oh, I haven't seen that.
It's very funny. So we will end with Miss Candace, because she recommended this to us. Sorry, Mrs. Candace. Sudsy, Jeremy? Sudsy, what do you think?
I remember this being on cable all the time back in the day. It's still entertaining. I don't necessarily think it holds up, really. Especially since I've never seen the original, so I don't know how one leads into the other. But it's still entertaining. I mean, this is a perfect Sunday afternoon movie. If you ever want to watch it and ever want to kill some time and got everything done, you can do a lot worse.
True.
Yeah, it is definitely better than the original. Both movies' entertainment value is dependent on how much screen time Johnny Five gets.
Right.
He has a lot more screen time in this one. And let's be honest, he is pretty much the only reason to watch these.
Yeah.
I mean, every second he's on screen is absolute gold. So I would say watch it for him. The movies themselves aren't exactly art, but every time he's on screen, you will be entertained.
Perfect. Get it.
So I remember loving this film so much as a child. And I knew that when I watched this again, it was just going to be just as amazing. I'm a little sad to say it's not as great as I remember, but I still had a good time watching it. Of course, the last part of the film where the montage is going and the hero song's playing, I at that moment, I was, again, like 8 years old. And I guess 6 years old at that point. 6 years old. And I was like, this is the greatest film of all time. So sure. they got me at the end. They hook, line, and sinker. Definitely you should watch it. And God bless all robots, because robots make the best movies. Man.
My final thought on this is, if you're our age and you have an adorable little, you know, Candace at home, this is a perfect movie for an 8 year old still. Like, what? There's nothing offensive about it. It's very silly. It's over the top. The effects are still incredible. And then I would also say it's a perfect movie for, it's 10:45, 11 o'clock at night. Everyone at the party's kind of drunk and they're all our age, because it's not going to disappoint you, right? All it is exactly what you remember. The jokes are going to hit, different jokes are going to hit you, but it's still fine. I mean, when you guys listen to this, by the time it's on Letterboxd, it's going to be maybe a 3.5 out of 5. But it's perfectly a fun movie. There's nothing wrong with it. I mean, again, we talked about the weird racist Indian trope, but he's not malicious with it. I mean, again, it's like watching a Pooh in the early scenes of The Simpsons. Should it have been an Indian guy? Yeah, but he's not being an asshole about it, right? Like, it's not for the joke is not that. All he does is spoonerisms. But in the meantime, we are out of time. So I will say what's going to be our Thanksgiving movie, possibly the most Thanksgiving movie of all Thanksgiving movies, John Candy and Steve Martin star in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, which... I can already hear the heavy, like, weeping that I'm going to be doing.
One of the five neat guys with one of the two wild and crazy guys.
Well, I mean, two people with honest-to-God, heavy-duty comedy chops are going to be in one of the most emotional dramas since Chevy Chase got arrested for prostitution. So stay tuned next week and every future week as we put a bit of your past on trial and we watch a little bit more of them movies, girl. And we're out. Let's go eat some hot wings.
My Opening Movies is a production of the Movement of Podcasting, presented by Nick Kaufman, edited by Nick Kaufman, and Andrew Settis. The theme song is Surf Shimmy by Jeff McLeod, on the music of the podcast.com. It is registered under the Creative Store license. Our regular panelists, thanks for listening. Please support our Patreon at patreon.com/myopia. Thank you.
The quietest Candace is when I'm doing audio check.
I'm being respectful.
I doubt it. One, two, three.